He says, the battle for free speech is never ending. I will kill the entire world if I have to.
Today, Christian's lawyers began laying out their defense, a defense that attempts to hand down blame to Micah Fletcher, the only surviving victim.
Well, so now Mr. Fletcher has become the aggressor.
Christian's attorneys doubling down on their arguments, calling only two witnesses to the stand, both doctors who spoke for hours on his mental state.
Will cause him to have challenges interacting in the world. He will tend to select a response and stick with it regardless of feedback. He will not see the full picture.
I'm Ian Costello. For the better part of the last 3 years, we have known very little about Jeremy Christian, other than prosecutors say he killed two men and critically wounded a third during a hate-fueled rampage on board a Portland MAX train on Friday, May 26, 2017. We know even less about him from before that day. For the better part of the last 3 weeks, anyone in the courtroom for his trial has seen videos that show Jeremy Christian violently attacking those three men. Those same videos show two of those men die. This week, we heard Jeremy Christian's defense team make its case that he shouldn't be convicted. It's Friday, February 14th, and this is the trial of Jeremy Christian.
From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 digital exclusive.
Once again this week, Coin Digital reporter Hannah Rae Lambert is here. She has been in the courtroom for every day of testimony in the Jeremy Christian trial. Hannah Rae, thank you for wrapping up another busy week with me.
Thanks for having me.
After almost 3 years of waiting, the defense of Jeremy Christian began in earnest this week. You have been able to do a little bit of digging into the public defenders representing him. What can you tell me?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned right there, they are public defenders. They are Dean Smith and Greg Scholl. They've got a pretty long history in this area. Greg Scholl even graduated from Lewis and Clark Law School. So they've been around for a long time, and they do represent people on behalf of the state of Oregon. These are not private attorneys. They don't get to necessarily choose their cases. So they have been assigned to this case, and they've been representing it to the best of their abilities for the last couple of years.
Once they started calling witnesses, we heard for the first time in a lot of cases from some of the people who knew Jeremy Christian the best. What did we learn about him from his friends and family?
We learned so much this week. I mean, before now, everyone had kind of their preformed ideas about who Jeremy Christian was. This week, we got to learn a lot. A lot of it actually came from some of the experts that the defense brought forward. These are people who spent time with him, interviewing him and giving him, you know, sort of psychological tests while he was behind bars. So through that, through the interview process, they talked to his family and friends, and they learned about his childhood. He had some trouble in school, didn't make very good grades for a lot of it. We learned about his parents. His dad, as one expert put it, was possibly autistic. He described him as being very socially awkward, not really paying attention to, you know, the questions he was trying to ask him in the interview. And he also described him as being an emotionally distant father. He didn't even remember Jeremy's date of birth when he was asked for it, which was shocking to me. And then we learned about his mom and dad's relationship, particularly. We knew that they had gotten divorced when he was quite young, but we also learned that his mom was described by more than one person as a hoarder. And when she would go out of town, his dad would get the boys to gang up on her and throw away her stuff. So when she came back, they would have these screaming fights. So we learned about that aspect of his childhood. And then,
this is obviously a very difficult home in which to grow up.
Definitely, definitely. He had three brothers. I think he was the third child of four. At least one of his brothers was described as a handful and required a lot of attention. So a difficult environment to grow up in as a child. And then we also heard from three people who knew him as both a preteen and a teenager, the first being Marcia Hoy. And Jeremy Christian was friends with her sons when he was like about 11 or 12. She described them as being pretty much normal, you know, young boys playing in the neighborhood and stuff. One thing that they asked her about, that they asked all three of these kind of character witnesses, was about his racial beliefs at that young age. She said emphatically that, you know, all the boys, they played with all the kids in the neighborhood. They were not prejudiced at all. And then this was reiterated by the second and third character witnesses, who were both females who worked with him when he worked at Pietro's Pizza for about 4 years as a teenager. And they both described him. One described him as being like a little brother to her. The other one, they dated briefly. She had good things to say about him. But everyone who testified, who knew him as a younger man, they testified that prison changed him. So he went in, you know, being all nice and stuff. And then when he came out, they described him as being angry and loud and having a chip on his shoulder.
And we know that he was in prison for the attack, the robbery and the attack at the convenience store.
Yes, when he was about 19.
And that's the incident in which he got shot in the face by a police officer.
Yes, because at the time he was armed, he had a loaded gun and he started to pull it out, and that's when he got shot.
Along with the character witnesses and the more personal stories that came up in testimony, Christian's defense team really seemed to rely on expert testimony about his mental state and his behavior and his ethos. What kind of picture did they draw of the man who wound up on the MAX that day?
Right. So going a little bit out of order on the witnesses, because they had these witnesses over multiple days, they brought in three PhDs, psychologists, and they talked about kind of his state of mind. One of them, Glenna Andrews, she visited with him several times in prison and gave him a battery of tests. Basically, these are long, long personality tests to kind of figure out what his mental state was. Pretty much he scored average on those, although she did note in her testimony some elevated areas, like he showed elevated levels of difficulty processing and remembering details in his environment. He showed a tendency to kind of formulate a rigid plan and then stick to it, even if it wasn't working or if the rules of the test that she was administering changed. So there were some areas of concern for her in that. And there was also an expert, Timothy Durning, who they called, who is a forensic neuropsychologist. So he is both a psychologist and focuses on kind of the legal aspects of that and what that means. He was the first person actually to diagnose Christian with autism. So that was a major part of his testimony. And he also brought up the fact of the dysfunctional family, that environment being hard to grow up in. And then the final witness that they called was Patricia Warford. She also gave him a bunch of tests, met his parents, got some good background info on him, and kind of painted a picture of what she described as his world imploding right before the events on the MAX train. She noted that a couple days before, his father had told him that they were going to throw out his comic book collection that they kept at the house. He had thousands of comic books, and at this time in his life, he was selling them. That was his only source of income, really. So it wasn't just like a childhood collection that his dad was going to throw out. So that was one kind of trigger point that she identified, the other one being the night before the incident on the train with Demetria Hester.
And just to catch people up, that's the one where they got in a bit of an argument, for lack of a better term. He used some very terrible language and called her some names. That incident ended with him throwing a bottle at her face and her macing him, correct?
Yes. I think the order that we established throughout the different witness testimony was he was threatening her, she maced him, and at that same time, he threw the bottle at her face. But it was kind of a lot of the similar kind of ranting that we then saw the next day on the MAX.
So his life is coming apart in the days and more specifically the hours before the attack on the MAX.
Right. And that's kind of the consensus of all of the experts that the defense brought forward.
You mentioned it once a minute ago. The defense team seemed to switch the narrative a little bit midweek to focus on his autism. Was there a reason behind that? Did they explain a reason behind that? Why do you think they did that?
I don't think they made it clear in the testimony. I knew that we were kind of waiting for this to come up ever since opening statements they had mentioned autism, that was going to be kind of part of their defense. And in general, all of the mental issues that their experts testified to. They, like I said, they identified some areas of deficit, which Christian's attorneys are trying to use to beef up that self-defense argument. Basically, they want the jury to decide that Christian perceived a threat from the other men on the train, and that because he's not able to perceive the world around him accurately, he might not notice everything correctly. That's what caused him to act in a way that we wouldn't consider quote-unquote normal.
Hannah Ray, on Wednesday, you reported that Jeremy Christian would not take the stand in his own defense. You were in the courtroom when that happened. How did his defense team explain their decision-making to Judge Albrecht?
She had been told ahead of time, I think, that he was not planning on testifying. She wanted to confirm that he was making this very important decision on his own without being influenced or pressured by anyone else. And Christian basically told her he didn't want to open up a can of worms. That was his reasoning for it. And his attorneys confirmed that, you know, they weren't coercing him not to take the stand in his own defense. So Judge Albrecht basically told him how important the right to testify in your own defense is, and that he can change his mind at any point.
Hannah Ray, after the defense wrapped up its case, prosecutors called a few rebuttal witnesses. From your seat in the courtroom, what was the message the state was trying to send to the jury with that testimony?
The state was really trying to take apart piece by piece the defense's witnesses who testified to various mental health issues that Christian may have had. One of their first rebuttal witnesses was actually Detective Michelle Michaels, who had testified for the state earlier in this case. She is the lead homicide detective on this particular case. And a lot of her questioning surrounded some Facebook posts that Christian had in the past that were tinged with that racially charged language. But they also asked about certain statements he made to police after his arrest, particularly focusing on one that he made in the police car ride to jail that was recorded. While he was talking at the police officers, he paused and commented on a car that was driving in front of them erratically and told the officers that they needed to pull that guy over. He even referenced the bumper sticker on the car, which said, "Blessed be." Jeremy Christian said, "Blessed be, this guy needs a ticket." So the prosecutors asked her if that sounded like something that someone who can't take in their surroundings and can't observe detail would say, and she answered emphatically no. Their other witness that they called today, actually, their final witness was Dr. Newman. He was called basically to testify that he doesn't see any signs of autism in Jeremy Christian. And in fact, he would instead diagnose him with two different things, the first being antisocial personality disorder, and the second being an alcohol use disorder. So these are very different than the defense that Christian's attorneys are trying to portray. They also called in some other mental health experts and a Oregon Department of Corrections worker who looked over Christian's records while he was incarcerated the previous time and testified about him starting fights with other inmates, particularly in his later years with Hispanic inmates. So they're really just trying to dismantle everything the defense just told us.
Hannah Ray, we're headed into a 3-day holiday weekend. Tuesday, we expect closing arguments, and then the case will be handed to the jury, who has a very tough task ahead of them.
Right. They have to decide on 12 total charges. Jeremy Christian has pleaded not guilty to all of them. They include 2 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of first-degree attempted murder, that would be Micah Fletcher, a count of first-degree assault, a count of second-degree assault, 3 counts of second-degree intimidation, that's related to the 2 girls that were on the MAX train, as well as, I believe, Sean Ford is the other intimidation count. Also, 2 counts of unlawful use of a weapon and 2 counts of menacing. So they have a lot of charges to decide on once it gets to them.
Best guess, next Friday when you and I meet here, are we going to have a verdict?
Oh, it's so hard to say. Everyone has their own opinions on this. Some people are thinking it'll be done within a day. My best guess would be it'll take at least a day. There's just so many charges, but you never know. I'm not on the jury. I don't know what they're thinking. I'm not willing to make any money bets on this one.
It has been a pleasure talking to you. You have been providing fantastic coverage of the trial for Coin6 News and Coin.com. How can people follow along with your coverage?
They can follow me on Twitter at the Hannah Ray. I post pretty regularly on there whenever we get a break. The inside the courtroom is very fast moving, so I tend to tweet a lot at once and then observe for a while. So you can follow me on there and also get all the latest updates on coin.com.
Thank you very much and have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hey, Coin6 meteorologist Kelly Bayern here. We know that you like to know what to expect from the weather each week and how it could affect everything from getting to work on time today or what you want to do with your weekend. That's why we've launched Your Weather Week podcast on the Coin Podcast Network. Each Monday, fellow coin meteorologist Joseph Dames and I take an in-depth look at your forecast and bring it to you in a fun, relaxed atmosphere that you can download and listen to whenever and wherever you want. So check out Your Weather Week on the Coin Podcast Network every week. You can find it on coin.com or iTunes, Spotify, and Podbean.